Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
So let's go ahead and get started. For this, if you're familiar with infographics, I developed three infographics that we'll be using here, and I'm walking through this in the form of a Prezi. You'll see nine books up there. You don't quite see them on this one, but one of them is a roadmap to effective teams in intercultural teams. You're welcome to pass that around. The other second half that we'll go through is team patterns. What types of things do we see on intercultural teams? So we'll start this one on this side. Roughly nine books I worked my way through in developing this material. The top three are from a business perspective. Then the bottom three are from a sociological perspective. And the middle three start to move in a direction from a biblical perspective. And they give you a frame of reference for that. I'm not writing them down or identifying them for you. But if you download the Prezi, you'll be able to see all these books as well, too, as part of the material that I worked through. So I would like to suggest, just as we talk about people adjusting to another culture, we often mention four phases in that adjustment. And I will argue that an intercultural team walks through parallel phases as well, too. And so we have four steps. I'm an American, normally that's three steps, but I'm going to a four step. They don't all start with the same letter or end with the same T-I-O-N. It's just four different phases that people go through. And the biggest challenge for intercultural teams is they tend to get stuck at the second step. And so we'll talk about that. So first of all, what's this roadmap? We're going to imagine a team now, and I'm using this as an example throughout. The team is comprised of an American, a Swede, a German, and a South Korean. I had to bring the South Korean in because they're so prominent in missions around the world. I had to bring the Swede in honor of all the Scandinavian people that are part of this conference. I had to bring an American in because they're so obnoxious. They're just part of the picture. And I thought I would bring a German in because of their strength and mission as well, too. So when we look at this, what we're talking about, a team is a group of people who are committed to a common vision and to one another. Now, I've worked on teams before that were teams only in name. Our agency, our organization called us a team, but we were really four independent individuals doing our own thing who would meet once a week, but we weren't working on the same project. Here, what we're talking about is a people committed to a common vision and to one another who hold each other accountable to the accomplishment of that vision and who work interdependently rather than independently and according to commonly agreed values to accomplish their goals. This is very pragmatically focused here. As we heard last night, if you don't have an aim or a goal, you'll reach it on a regular basis. But if you do have an aim or a goal, at least you know a direction that you're going in. And we'll talk about that. And even the ability to establish an aim is an intercultural exercise in and of itself, and how you envision what that means. So the first phase is what we in the United States call the honeymoon phase. It means everything is good. It's the first year, for some of you longer than that, for some of you shorter than that, of your marriage. It's where your spouse can do no wrong. Well, they do, but you overlook all the wrongs that they do during the honeymoon phase. So goodwill abounds. You can call this, using terms from adjustment to a new culture, the unconscious incompetence phase. I had no clue how often I offended my wife our first year of marriage. But she forgave me because she was still in that blush of the first year of marriage. As time went by, I began to realize, oh, I'm stumbling on a regular basis, but so was she. And so this unconscious incompetence is acceptable because you're still new to the relationship and you're trying to understand things and there's space to get along. There's a testing of the waters that happens at this phase, the relationship waters. You might develop alliances with people within the culture. And at this point in time, each person's natural cultural inclinations are still dominant. And they are in control of things. You're doing it without thinking about it. And sometimes it's something very small. So I went to a kiosk in Swaziland and I said, "You don't have peanut butter, do you?" And the shopkeeper said, "No." Oh, sorry, the shopkeeper said, "Yes." I said, "I would like some peanut butter." They said, "We don't have any." I said, "You said, yes, we do." He said, "No." I said, "Yes, we don't." It was a different use of the double negative from his tradition that was different than mine. Another time, I remember seeing a pastor, a friend of mine, yell at a dog, and it dawned on me, the dog knows more of the local language than I do. And I was very sad about that. But in reality, I was still following my natural, in my case, white, suburban, American understanding of the world. It took about 10 years to get that knocked out of me. And then my wife and I came back to the States. And then it took about 3 years to readjust to life back in the States. Part of that readjustment was giving up on the shallowness of relationships and realizing I wasn't going to have the types of relationships I had in Africa that I had grown used to, because Americans don't like those types of relationships. So we have this phase in the process. But then we get to the second phase, and this might come 2 months after the team is formed. This might come a year after the team is formed. It will come. I can guarantee you that. This team shock is a way you can think of it, and it parallels culture shock when people go from one culture to another. You've moved from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence. Now you're aware of your incompetence, but perhaps your language skills are not strong enough yet to overcome that. Perhaps you're still realizing, I just know I do things wrong and I make mistakes on a regular basis. You become aware of the differences and the warts that are part of being human beings begin to impact the team dynamics and the team energy, and you find stresses and strains begin to come at this phase. What's the basis of those? So we're going to spend a little bit more extended time looking at components of this phase in cross-cultural teams. In an international teams, nobody is normal. And there's a challenge if the leader of the team thinks that his or her leadership is normal for everyone else. But in international teams, nobody is normal. This is not as alarming as it sounds, but the team leader must bear in mind that colleagues have their own perspectives on other nationalities. This is written from a business vantage point, by the way, trying to think through what it means for us to understand how to do businesses together. So to help us get at this, I'm going to revisit some of the material we looked at last year. It's a global study of leadership. 62 countries were studied extensively. What I like about this study is they said, what do you value? But then they didn't stop there. They said, how do you practice it? And then they asked, what's the difference between the values and the practice? And we'll see how that works itself out in a minute. This particular study comes from these three sociological texts, and there are more studies coming out on a regular basis. There are 160 scholars around the world who are involved in this study, all of them in secular university settings, all of them trying to explore what does it mean that Rolf is from Norway and I am from the United States. How will we differ than when we're on a team? How do we approach negotiating? How do we think about leadership? How do we think about conflict? How do we understand all of these things? And then how can you understand me better, and how can I understand you better so that we can figure out ways to get along? The challenge is it's not just what you value, it's how you actually live out your life. And the simple reality is you're Norwegian, but you might not be completely Norwegian. You might act in strange ways and I might act in strange ways for an American. So what this does is look at national characteristics, but recognizes that not everybody follows those national characteristics. So we start with these globe cultural values. I'm not going to walk through all of these, but I will just mention them. Assertiveness, an orientation towards the future. Of the four countries that are in this study, Germany is the most assertive. Does that make sense to you? And Sweden is the least assertive. Does that make sense to you? You can see how the stereotypes play out a little bit here. Future orientation, gender egalitarianism. It's not surprising that Sweden values this the highest, and it's not surprising that South Korea values this the lowest either. Humane orientation, and I'll get to this one in a minute. In-group collectivism, two types of collectivism. This one is the degree to which individuals express pride, loyalty in their organizations or their families. This one is the degree to which the organization and social institution encourage and reward a collective distribution. So if a prize comes, it's shared among all, and perhaps equally, rather than a prize coming to an organization and the sole leader receiving the prize completely. Performance orientation, the degree to which performance is vital and important for the person. Power distance, in every society there are differences in levels of social power. To what extent does the society say these are good or these are bad? In Israel they have a saying, a private can tell a general what to do. You would never hear that saying in the United States. I don't think you would hear that saying in Russia either. But this is the reality, and so South Korea has the largest power distance, and you would expect South Korean leaders to be the boss, and the rest of the people will obey them. As opposed to the Swedes, where you might expect to see everyone is somewhat equal, there's a person who's designated the boss, but that person knows how to make sure everybody is involved in decision making. And the South Korean might not care whether everyone is involved in the decision making. I'm working stereotypes here again, so I'll say that many times. And then uncertainty avoidance. To what extent do you want rules and regulations to govern how you live? South Koreans are more flexible. They talk about relationship policy, which means they have a policy manual just like the Americans, but they decide whether to follow the policy manual based on the relationships they have with each other. Whereas the Americans simply look at the policy and say, here's what the policy is. Ideally, Americans don't all behave that way. But that's how it's supposed to happen. And I hear complaints at my school on a regular basis, Wheaton College where I teach, of the provost can make a decision about anyone any way he wants to, and that's not fair. A Korean would never complain about that, because of course the provost would have the right to make a decision any way he, until June 1st, then it's she, we have a new provost coming in, would be able to make a decision. So I do want to touch on four of these. First, assertiveness. Germans more assertive, the degree to which individuals are assertive, confrontational, and aggressive in their relationships with others. Are Swedes known for being assertive? Not really. Gender egalitarianism, the degree to which a collective minimizes gender inequality. Every society has some level of gender inequality, and typically, in many societies, the male is the dominant of the two genders. That's a sociological reality. The question is, does the society idealize that or not? The Swedes idealize minimizing it, so that means they want greater gender equality, and the Koreans want less gender equality, because people have roles and places. This plays out, by the way, in the whole debate of male versus female leadership, which we tend to think is purely exegetical, but culture drives our exegesis in significant ways. And that's one of the problems I have when I read people on both sides of the coin. They don't look at how their own culture is driving them towards the decisions that they're making. Though people from the same culture come out on different sides of this. And in the US we see this war perhaps more overtly than in other places, but that's in part because US culture has shifted from a largely gender separated culture to a far less generated separate culture today, and there still is a war going on over how that should be implemented. a humane orientation. I wanted to have something with USA differing from somebody in this, so I chose this one. The degree to which a collective encourages and rewards individuals for being fair, altruistic, generous, caring, and kind to others. I just was the recipient at Wheaton College this year of something called the Geezer Presidential Award. Now, if you know the English word geezer, you also realize it means an old person, and my children were delighted. Dad, that means, do you have to be old to get that award? Is that what it means? No, it's an award named after somebody whose last name was Geezer, but it means you're doing institutional and outside the institution service. So in other words, this was awarded among the faculty and among the staff at the college for something that says you're doing something that's serving outside of the community and also inside of the community, as opposed to Germany where this is simply expected. Why should we reward something when it's expected of somebody? Why should we even take note of that? And again, I'm speaking in broad stereotypes, so please accept my apologies if I'm offending you. I'm an equal opportunity offender, and you'll find as we go by that all of you might be offended in some way. That means I'm getting through, perhaps. And I even offend myself at times. Okay, power distance, the degree to which members of a collective expect power to be distributed unequally. Even in the same organization, you can see this. I'm graduate academic dean, associate academic dean at Wheaton College, and getting the faculty to make a decision is a completely different story than getting the administrative staff to make a decision. To get the administrative staff to make a decision, you say, do it. To get the faculty to make a decision, you have to persuade them, even in the same institution, because they have different degrees of power in the institution. So how does this then get worked out in teams? Well, the GLOBE study, as I said, looked at practices. So look at the power distance, and down along the bottom, what country is highest in power distance? South Koreans. What country is lowest? You can barely see the blue. It's hiding underneath the green there. The blue is the Swedes. So in terms of actual practice, the Koreans are the highest and the Swedes are the lowest, but both set practice it. The interesting thing is to see how they value it. There you see a completely different picture, don't you? And again here, the South Koreans value it the least, and in this case, the Americans are highest, and the Germans are hiding behind here. They're right behind these South Koreans. So it gets very interesting then when you start looking at gaps. What's the difference? In every case, countries have a higher practice of power distance than they value. Gender egalitarianism, countries have a lower practice than what they value. In the case of institutional collectivism, some practice more, some practice less. And here you see the example of assertiveness. Germans are more assertive than they value, and Swedes are less assertive than they value. The Swedes want to be more assertive, the Germans want to be less assertive. That's why it's very important to look not just at what the cultural values are, but how people actually practice them. Now you'll see a URL up here. This leads you to an Excel spreadsheet, which you can download. And if you'll excuse me, I will go to that spreadsheet. And this spreadsheet, I've got all of the actual data behind that graph. So you can download this and make this your own graph. One of the nice things is when you see this now in Excel, if you have Excel 2013, if you click on the graph, you get this little funnel. It lets you choose which countries you want to place here. So if you have a team of different countries, if you've got an Egyptian on your team, and you don't have a German, but you've got someone from Hong Kong on your team, and you don't have a Korean, but you have a white South African on your team, let's get rid of the American as well too. You have a Swiss, and you'll notice this distinguishes between, this is German-speaking Switzerland and French-speaking Switzerland. It distinguishes between those two and between East and West Germany. Then you click on Apply, and it changes the graph entirely for you. So you get to see then what each country. So if you're working on an intercultural team and the countries are represented in the 62 countries that are in the database, you can go through and see what the differences are on your team. So let me encourage you to download it. You don't get the nice bubbles every time you start to get different lines. I can't make it so it does bubbles every time for all of you. You can do the same thing for practices, the same thing for gaps. And if you really like just reading the raw numbers, they're on the fourth sheet. If that's what you like, if that gets you excited, then have we got a deal for you. Okay, so let's hopefully return to the presentation, yes, where we were. Yes. These were people from three different industries. And it's a food services industry, a telecom industry, and I think a financial sector industry. And so this is the sociological study of people, and they looked at management and they looked at employees who were not management as well too. And it's several hundred thousand surveys taken from, you know, at least 1,000 from each country that are represented there. And they did have to do, they were careful with the data. They had data from the Czech Republic and they had to throw it out because there was too much sample bias in the data. It was so skewed they could see this is a false reading on it. But what they tried to do, the sociologists who were looking at the data, tried to make sure they knew that the data, they tried to make sure the data represented people in cross sections in industry across the country. So this is secular information in looking at that. And I'll try and remember to repeat the question. Sorry, I forgot to do it that time. But the question is, where did the data come from on this? So here are the gaps, and where all I'm doing is laying out for you the German, the Korean, the American, the Swede. I've got them all looking at each other in a strange way right now. But where the practice is greater than the value is a green color. And you notice power distance, power distance, power distance, power distance number two. So every country has a problem between what they value in social power and how they actually practice in social power. You also see humane orientation, all four of them also have they value humane orientation more than they actually practice it. They value power distance less than they actually, so they're more powerful and less humane than they want to be. And that's the simple reality of the representatives of these four countries. This does not say that Christians or missionaries or ministry workers from these countries will have this same set of values, but it does say in general, when you're looking at society as a whole, this is a framing of reference for it. You can see why this gets complicated very quickly, can't you? Trying to imagine your own team, and that's where you've got a gold card for yourself and blue cards for the other members of the team, and trying to picture, what does this mean for me when it comes time for the team to make a decision? What does this mean for me when we deal with conflict, when we have different values about things and towards things? So now we're going to move in a direction of what happens in phase two when you get stuck. And here's a place where you often get stuck. It's the stereotypes you have about foreigners and how those get played out. Just think to yourself, what stereotypes do you have about Koreans? As far as I can see, I don't see any.
Hardworking,
good. So we can have positive and negative stereotypes. Hardworking is certainly one of them.
Dominating,
okay, that's a good thing, right? No. Very monocultural. And when I was there dealing with at a conference on immigration in Korea, they said, yes, we're all one language, one culture. As long as you ignore Jeju Island, you're okay, but everything else is all one language and one culture, and we don't know how to handle immigrants. And so we're getting a slowly growing migrant population. What does this mean for us? And yet, when Koreans go overseas to work, they tend to be very monocultural. I'm so glad Americans are not monocultural, right? So I have a good biblical verse for this. Titus 1, one of the Crete's own prophets has said, Cretans are always liars, evil brutes, lazy gluttons. This saying is true. I don't think I even need to comment on that, do I? But the reality of stereotypes playing a role in how we understand people from other cultures and other settings. I don't see people using that as a verse for preaching on a regular basis, but it's one I thought I would bring here. Initially, team members operate on the basis of stereotypes because they don't know each other yet. Societal characteristics certainly can be stereotypes. The stereotypes exist because they're perceived to be true by those holding them. Koreans are dominant. Koreans are hardworking. Each member must go beyond the stereotypes if you're to form a team culture. But you know what? Your team culture cannot be any single culture of any of the teammates. It needs to be a third way, something that brings in all. The challenge comes if you add new teammates every year. How do you forge an entire new team culture in the space of a year? It's impossible. And that makes it easy for teams to stay separated when an agency has you forming and reforming and forming and reforming on a regular basis, and you're bringing people together. So what are the stereotypes? Germans, stereotypes about foreigners. Foreigners are unpunctual, they're inefficient, they're undisciplined, they're flippant. We could go through. What do the Swedes say? Well, foreigners are hurried, they're individualistic, they're uncaring. They're often incorrect, because who is correct? The Swedes are correct, of course. South Koreans, foreigners can be impatient, they can be loud, they can be lazy and uncommitted, disrespectful of authority, especially when they're thinking of Americans, overweight. I've heard this many times from Koreans. Not good listeners. They display their emotion too readily. They don't know how to hide things. And then Americans, when they think of foreigners, foreigners are slow, they're old-fashioned, especially the Germans. They're cautious, they're impractical, especially the Germans. They're devious. That might be the Koreans. They're afraid of change and innovation. They're small thinkers. They're lacking in drive. These are stereotypes that people have that, unfortunately, we carry with us. I've got a wallet full of stereotypes that I carry with me when I go. Understanding them is important. Now, one of the things you can see is what types of leadership styles can be envisioned in each of these cultures. This is from Richard Lewis's book. Germans, headquarters makes the decision and then everyone else lines up with it. Koreans, they talk about it. When I was at a meeting on Koreans and Americans talking about accountability and missions, at the end of the meeting every night, we went 12 hours a day. And at the end of the night, the Koreans all got together in the hotel and talked for another 2 to 3 hours about what had been said. And part of it was coming to this consensus, but there are still leaders at the top that have the role and the responsibility and authority to make a decision. So if they can't come to a consensus, the leader will make a decision. But they want to have it this frame of reference. The Americans have what's called structured individualism, so that you're individualistic, but you fit within the chain of command. And you know who your boss's boss might happen to be. And you're very careful how you handle your relationships with them, depending on where you fit in the organization, the type of organization, and the social power you have. Faculty are less careful in a college than administrators are, because tenured faculty can't be fired very easily in the North American setting, but administrators are not tenured, so they can be let go. And the Swedes have a first among equals, so that circle at the top is the leader, but looks just like all the others, and they make sure everything is done well. They are the leader, but they're not a power leader. They're an opinion leader. They're able to make things happen because people pay attention. What happens if you get to a roundabout, which we don't know what they are in the United States, but some of them lead to car crashes, some of them lead to barriers where you're cutting others off, built on what? Blind spots. What's a blind spot for the Germans? They don't understand subtle humor, which is a strength of the Brits. They love to use subtle humor. So you can imagine how well the clashes can go there. The Swedes are slow decision makers, and they can be complacent, especially for the Americans. The Americans are insensitive to non-American values. I know this surprises you to see that Americans might be insensitive to non-American values. The Koreans can have a distorted worldview due to excessive nationalism. Korea is number one. They won't necessarily say that out loud, and they take pride in things that surprise me. They take pride in the fact that Korea has never invaded another country. So they think of themselves as non-aggressors, and yet you see them in the mission field. And in one sense, this perhaps is their substitution for invasion for them as they're going to reach the world for Christ. What a wonderful thing that they're reaching the world for Christ, but they're doing it a Korean way. So I would say the third phase is perhaps a third way acceptance. Now you move from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence, but now to conscious competence. You have to think about it. And you can remember, oh, that's right, there's a Swede on the team. We need to talk things through. Oh, that's right, there's a German on the team. Perhaps they want more background than simply making a decision. There's a Korean on the team. They just want to know what you want them to do because you're the boss. But they will also read the air as they're listening. A study was done of Japanese and Americans, and they had them make observations of fish in a fish tank. And the Japanese observations focused on what was in the background. The American observations focused on the fish themselves. And the Japanese statement is, how can you know what the fish are without knowing what the background is? And the Americans were, how can you know what the fish is unless you look right at the fish? Even portraits. So they told Japanese to take a portrait of a person, and they told Americans. The Americans almost always had a portrait, as you think of it, from here on up. The Japanese always had the person in a room. And that person was almost, not quite, but almost like a piece of furniture, because to the Japanese, you don't understand the person unless you understand the context in which the person is situated. If all you see is the face, how can you know the context? And the Japanese and the Koreans will talk about reading the air at a meeting. They don't just listen to the words, they listen to the tone of voice. They look at the body posture. They look at the eye contact. And on the basis of that, they see what decisions are being made, whether consciously or unconsciously. And usually they will not be quick to speak up because they haven't yet finished reading the air and knowing what the air is, so that when they speak up in the direction the wind is blowing rather than against it, unless they're convinced the wind is blowing in a really bad direction. So again, how can we read the air of our teams and learn to understand people better? Perhaps we need team pictures that are showing more of the background than just the face, especially if you're Japanese. Team members change expectations they have of teammates. You started with a stereotype, now you need to move beyond the stereotype to say, I'm beginning to know you now. I understand you better. You're not a stereotype, you're a person. How can I get along with you in a way that's better? Conscious allowance for otherness takes place. How can I allow you to be who you are, even as I want to be who I am? It gets to be difficult when you're in conflict, however. That's when things really get squeezed the most. And team culture begins to emerge at this point in time. So trust is an important part or component of team unity. The team must trust the leader, and they must know that the leader trusts them, and they must trust each other. How do you know when you trust somebody? And the role culture plays in developing trust is a critical piece. How does a Swede know she can trust her leader? It's if the leader listens to her and her voice is an important part of the input. How does a Korean know he can trust his leader? That his leader's been put in authority by God. And if he sees the leader is caring for the good of the team as a whole, then he will say, I can trust the leader. How does an American trust a leader? They have a great sense of humor. They are a good team player. They don't lose sight of the goal, and they keep going in a focused direction. How does the German know they can trust somebody? I know enough of the background of that person and where they're coming from that I've been able to see, yes, I can trust them, because they understand the prolegomena, not just the point of application. Again, I'm building that on stereotypes, so please excuse me where I'm wrong, and if you have questions or comments or want to make a correction, that means you're probably a German if you do, if you make it in public, right? I get the thumbs up from that. So now you see I've changed the picture, and I'm beginning to try and draw them together. What are things that we have to do? And there are roughly 14 things that you need to do. Forging strong emotional bonds, focusing on a central core vision and values, building a safe climate, and that will be different for each teammate. Perhaps the Swede needs to feel that everybody has a voice, but you know, the Korean might not want to say something right away. because the Korean is still reading the air, and the Swede says to the Korean, what do you have to say to this? That can be even threatening to the Korean, because they want to know what the boss thinks before they make a comment that's too far out. And so even things I found when I'm teaching in a Chinese setting, to expect brainstorming to work, which is a great American trick, doesn't work well in China, because they prefer simply to be told what they need to do, not in all cases, rather than them coming up with ideas and having those ideas. That's threatening to them. Practicing the discipline of thinking well of team members. This is perhaps one of the most important things. You have to have a mindset that your teammates really do mean well. And how often we get caught up in the idea they don't care about the gospel, they don't care about the church. We start making statements like this. I remember an American tell me after a Nigerian in Kenya had gone to the hospital knowing she was going to have twins and came out with only one child. She didn't know what happened to the other. She knew it was born with birth defects, but she didn't get the full information. And the American said, see, Africans don't value life. And I thought to myself, what a stupid statement. How can they even imagine that? But they're building on this stereotype. How can you then think well about your teammates? And at times it's hard. I know that from experience. I know that from experience of trying to think well of some of my American teammates who made these pronouncements at times that I was ashamed of. I won't mention Donald Trump now, will I? As a way of apology, right? I apologize, but you have to understand I have no impact on the American election or the political process at this point in time. As much as I pray, my wife and I are deciding what country we're going to migrate to should Trump win the election. We're trying to think of Canada, but we understand Canadians are going to build a wall to stop Americans from going north. Should that happen, we'll have to see how it works out. Learn how to learn together. How do they value learning? What are the ways they like to learn? Explore and celebrate cultural differences. Find ways to have on your team, okay, this is Korean style day. We will try and behave as Koreans, even though we can't. We will try it for the exercise of getting into the sandals of our Korean sister on our team. And next week, we're going to have a meeting that's going to be run in an American way. And we will fumble around, but we're getting inside what's taking place. We're trying to value other people. Identify and examine the hidden assumptions that you bring to the table. Some of you bring to the table this assumption. When I disagree with you, you're wrong. And some of you bring this assumption, when I disagree with you, I'm wrong. Which type of person are you? And we usually play a game with students that forces them to see this, and then I ask them to identify what side of the divide you find on. And we find a good number of them assume that they themselves are the person who is wrong, rather than the other person. Depends on how strong the personality of the other person is when they're looking at that. Develop effective team communication processes. That's part of exploring and celebrating cultural differences. Building trust, but understanding that trust is culturally mediated. It's a marvelous biblical word, but how I get to the stage where you trust me and I trust you will vary from culture to culture and what it means. Make decisions together, which can be very hard to do. Build a shared understanding of leadership and management. Develop a balance of roles and personalities. Promote and preserve the team's focus. If you all maintain that goal or that aim, it helps to keep you moving in the right direction. I've yet to meet a missionary who stops caring about the gospel in some way, shape, or form. I've assumed some have, but I've never actually met them and had them say, yeah, I don't care about the gospel anymore. I'm just here for the money. Or I'm just here because I don't know what to do anywhere else in the world. That's not why they're there. And yet, we call each other sinners, and we say this is wrong. How do we think well of each other? It's a good challenge and a question. And the fourth phase is effective synergy phase, the phase of unconscious competence where you no longer have to think about. The metaphor for me is what side of the road do you drive on? And so when I was in Swaziland, I had to learn how to drive on what I called the wrong side of the road, and the same thing in Kenya. And I knew that I had adjusted to that when I had a dream one night. And in my dream, I was back home driving my parents' car. And I remembered that here is the steering wheel towards the center of the road. Then you're on the proper side, as long as you haven't imported a car from another culture. But if the steering wheel is on the center of the road, you're okay. And in my dream, it was there. And I woke up from my dream. I realized I'd put the steering wheel in my parents' car on the wrong side of the car. I had adjusted. So for me, natural was driving on that way. That's a level of unconscious competence. I don't have to think about it anymore. Team culture is the norm rather than just my culture. So you know what? You will behave differently at home than you do with the team. Unless you're in a cross-cultural marriage with all of your teammates. Because at home you have to forge a culture as well too. And you might behave differently when you go to regional or national or international meetings of the rest of your organization. But that's okay. It's hardest for the independent individuals to realize I can be a chameleon. I can act one way here and another way here, and it's okay for me to act both ways. Missionaries long know this. And missionaries going back to the United States, I can speak of, have learned a special secret. How much do you tell churches about what you do here in Europe? Very little. You don't have 5 hours to explain to them what it is that you do in ways that would make sense to them, and you don't want them to tell you you're dead wrong in what you're doing, because that's the type of thing you'll hear. But that's hard for an independent individualist who was always trained to act the same way everywhere, otherwise you're a hypocrite. The Japanese know this instinctively. The Koreans know this instinctively. Their goal is not to be the same everywhere. Their goal is to live in harmony with their environment. So they read the air and try and get into that. Did I go through the last of them? A shared fluid inter-team dynamics, a shared vision and mission of team guides decisions and direction the team is effective. So what are the characteristics of positive attitudes towards other cultures? Humble. I'm still waiting to hear the word humble and American used in the same sentence without a negative in between them somewhere along the line. Respectful of others, being inclusive, being aware of yourself, who you are, what your proclivities, what your tendencies are, what you bring to the table. Patient, some of these sound like fruit of the Spirit, don't they? And these are not coming from sacred sources, they're coming from secular sources. Ready to listen, approachable, always learning, ready to try new ways to do things. This gives you a frame of reference for understanding it. Now, let's talk about some team patterns, but I want to look at the time here. We have until 11:30, so we've got about 18 minutes left right now. Here's what I want you to do. You've got these gold cards and you've got these blue cards, so I want you to get now in groups of 3 to 4 people. And the first thing I want you to do is identify the top 3 characteristics of people from your country to others in the group. The 3 that you named in the card. So you get to choose which 3. And if I haven't said anything related to your country in the card, then invent 3 words and put them in the card. Okay? So get into groups of 3 or 4 right now. And then we'll take some time. We'll take about 5 minutes just to talk with each other and get an idea. So you're hearing from a cultural expert from that country, because you yourselves are as expert as it gets. Okay, so what are team patterns? Healthy teams. Relationships are healthy. Each person feels safe and valued. There's a sense of common identity. Members are learning and growing. That won't always happen, because people come into teams with brokenness. They carry it with them. And it might be the Chinese might have a different form of brokenness than the Norwegians do, but both of them are broken. And for me, one of the components of this exercise of having you identify characteristics from your own country is first of all, to give you a chance to reflect on yourself a little bit, but secondly, to reflect on others who are from other countries and get the chance to hear from a cultural expert what they consider themselves and the people from their country to be. And it's okay if you chose all negative or all positive characteristics, because you are the expert in this exercise. And as I mentioned, you've got these blue cards as well too. And one of the values of filling out the blue cards, which I'm not going to give to you, is that the blue cards
I'm not going to give you time to work through this, but the blue cards give you the chance to think through what your stereotypes are about other members of your team, and perhaps what's driving how you're relating to other members of the team. I think it would be a good exercise as a team to fill out the gold cards and talk with each other, and then after you've had some time together, begin to fill out the blue cards. But sharing the blue cards can be a challenge, because it might mean you're saying something negative about somebody, and that can be very tough for Asians in particular to say negative things. Africans in general, except for Nigerians, have a tough time saying negative things. But even in Africa, the Malinese have a statement: if your child misbehaves, send him to Nigeria. In other words, they'll straighten the child out very quickly. Okay, again, we're on the same sample team, and so let's look at the strengths brought to the team. What strengths do Germans bring to the team? Technical details, forward planning, a general competence, keeping the schedules. They can spot difficulties. The Swedes, they're logical and practical. They're strong on processes. Perhaps they live in processes too much, but they're strong on those processes. They're compromisers when you reach deadlock. They're willing to bend. They're willing to flex. The Koreans are hardworking, good planners. They're cooperative team members. As long as the boss has decided, the Koreans are willing to go along with it. Now, if they disagree with you, they'll be extremely careful in whether they let you ever even know that they disagree with you. Americans are very good at getting things going, to simplify things, to think big. Americans don't like to think big, do they? To take risks, they're willing to invest time, energy, emotions. As I said, you will find all these materials, so I'm going to breeze through these because we just have a few minutes left. Germans are oral communication. You got to be honest whether it's pleasant or not. That can be tough with the Japanese. The South Korean, you want to protect your inner feelings. You keep your face, and we have this phrase in English, inscrutable Asians, from the 18th century and the 19th century. You can't read them because they've learned how to control their face and not let you know the inner feelings. It makes negotiating easier for them. The Swedes want to be as democratic as possible and make sure that everyone has a voice. But if the Koreans are afraid to talk because the German is too strong, the Swedes' desire to have the Korean talk would be thwarted on a regular basis. Americans like to spell it all out in a frank, open manner, as long as you do it in a funny way. You know, and as long as you can joke about it, you can say some pretty strong things in the United States and get away with them. Whereas the Germans, remember, they don't understand a subtle sense of humor. For them, it's just straight and direct. And please, do thumbs up or thumbs down if I'm missing it, okay? Because I know I'll hear about it later if I don't hear about it now. Yeah, right. You'll need 5 minutes or do you need 20 minutes during the break? Right. Areas of insight for the Germans, the order of things, processes, details. The Swedes have great collective skills and plannings. Koreans, again, energetic, hard workers, and they're good planners as well, too. Drive from the American, keeping what's the bottom line. I remember a statement from my American boss, the main thing is that the main thing remains the main thing. And I've heard that many times from Americans who think it's a biblical value. There's got to be a proverb on that somewhere, isn't there? Brainstorming. Now, I point this out on purpose, and we'll go ahead and conclude with this because I want to make sure I have time for questions. The color indicates how excited they are about brainstorming. So the general idea of brainstorming is you sit down and everything is, you can, any ideas you want to. So you give ideas, and then eventually you come to a common understanding. It's a process we use in American value, don't we? Yeah, let's brainstorm on this. And we do this in our department. We do this I do this administratively with people on a regular basis at Wheaton. Koreans don't like it, even though they're more open than most Confucian Asians to brainstorming, because it means you don't have a chance to read the air before you have to express things. And so Koreans will gladly sit in on a brainstorming session, but less likely participate unless they trust you, unless they've been with you long enough to know and to have a feel for you, or unless they're in positions of power and they can say things and know things. But the idea, it's hard to brainstorm when you have a large power distance culture. because it means whatever the boss says is the final thing. Germans are cautious. It's vertical. Few Germans wish to contradict superiors or disagree openly. They also wish to be honest. Brainstorming presents a dilemma. So in other words, I say something stupid, and a German would want to critique it. Rightly so. But the idea behind brainstorming, as Americans envision it, is no criticism. It's just let the ideas flow like you're popping popcorn. That's the metaphor that we use on a regular basis. The Swedes want long discussion and forming consensus, a typical Swedish means. The rather formal manner of exchanging ideas is far removed from the American concept of brainstorming. It's done in a give and take, but it's different. And I don't know where brainstorming fits in your spectrum. I would imagine in Russia, brainstorming might be threatening. That's my stereotype. I don't know how that fits in Ukraine. I don't know how that fits in Belarus. I don't know how that fits in any of the Stan countries. But these are all frames of reference for us to think through. And I said I would stop with that to open the door for questions. The question is, there are different strengths each person brings to the table. And some of those are culturally derived. You didn't say this. Some of those are individually derived. How can you, as the team leader, bring those to the table and draw those out? And that's why I say we need to, I think it's fair to start with some of the stereotypes, but if you stop there, you're damaging everything. You need to move beyond that part of the map and get to know the individual. And if you ask an American how you do this, well, you do Gallup StrengthsFinders, or you do Myers-Briggs. Those tests are not inherently evil in and of themselves, but they're also culturally mediated. What are ways that you can get at what are strengths that are there? A lot of people coming to your team do bring strengths. I'd say everybody brings some. But you need to spend time with them as the leader, perhaps one-on-one, to get to know them better and find out what their strengths are. And sometimes if they're very young, they don't even know their strengths yet. It takes time to draw those out. So you might have to put them in situations where they begin to see this is a strength or this is not a strength for me.